This is the legendary Tom DeFalco, and you're listening to Amazing Spider Talk. Tell all your friends, because these guys are going to pay me a buck every time a new listener tunes in.
Too many who know the angles, uncover and untangle all the questions and the webs left out to tangle. Be it 1962, or last Wednesday's afternoon, they'll bend your ears with reckless self-abandon. The Amazing Spider-Talk. The Amazing Spider-Talk. Come swing through the air, sit back and prepare for the Amazing Spider-Talk.
Hello and welcome to the Amazing Spider Talk. My name is Dan Gavazdin, and I'm the founder and editor of SuperiorSpiderTalk.com. Thanks for joining me for a special Amazing Friends episode of Amazing Spider Talk. I hope you enjoy this podcast and that it provides an intelligent conversation between a fan and a creator as we look at the Spider-Man comic universe in a bit of a bigger picture. Well, for this episode, I'll be talking to Mark Giannacchio, the creator of the Chasing Amazing blog, co-host of the Amazing Spider Talk podcast, whatever that is, and the author of the new book, 100 Things Spider-Man Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die, which is kind of a scary title because it seems as though Spider-Man fans might be on the edge of dying. Well, I'm really excited to have him on as a guest, and I can't wait to hear more about his new book detailing the history of my favorite character, Spider-Man. So let's not wait any longer, and let's get right to the interview with none other than Mark.
Well, now let's meet one of our amazing spider friends, the kind of guy I go to other friends who recommend. Find out about the things they created.
You'll love them so much that you wish you dated.
But you're just friends, they're an amazing friend.
A friend, a friend, a friend. They're an amazing friend.
Well, welcome to the show, Mark. It's really great to have you.
Dan, that is just very weird to hear from the other side. I kept wanting to be like,
I don't know what you're talking about. Welcome to the show for the first time.
Thank you very much. Well, I'm going to do what I imagine all creators do when they come on your show, Dan, which is, hold on. I'm going to enjoy a beverage.
Mark is drinking some alcohol right now.
Yes, it is a Sam Adam Tropic of Yuzu. It's from the Sam Adam Summer Pack. I've never had this one before. It's a little exotic and fruity. It's nice.
I feel like Sam Adams has more beers in its line than every other beer company combined.
They're like the Marvel Comics of beer.
Yeah, right. And everything gets discontinued after a couple months.
Pretty much, yes.
Yeah, right.
this beer is kind of like Mockingbird. It's kind of tasty, but ask it about its feminist agenda, and it's going to disappear after 7 inches.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Mark, this is going to be a very, like, navel-gazy episode.
I love navel-gazing.
Yeah, but let's dive right in. Congratulations on your book. I got my copy in the mail from you. Later than everybody else, I'll add, but still excited to have received it with a little note from you in it. I thought it was fitting. I showed up to a date with my fiance, Amy, and she whipped a package out from behind her back, and it was your book. And then I spent the date looking at the book and tearing up, having a beer over it while she checked her phone or something. But
I hope those were tears of joy and not tears of, like, God, I can't believe he spent all this time and this was the net result for shame.
Oh, no, that dawning realization didn't come till much later.
Okay, there you go.
Again, congratulations on the book. I think it's a really a brilliant little guide through the world of Spider-Man. And mostly I'm excited for kind of a younger generation of fans to pick this thing up, which – it, to me, is the intended audience of this thing, is like people who really want to learn kind of the ins and outs of Spider-Man, like, you know, maybe for the first time. But that's not to say that I'm not learning things reading it, because I definitely have been as well. But I guess the first off is, can you tell me and the listeners, I guess I know a little bit about this, but like, how did this book come to be? And I guess what were the parameters of the book when you, the editor, kind of connected with you?
Sure. Well, around last summer, a little more than a year ago at this point, I got like a cold call, so to speak, a cold email from Triumph Books asking if I would be interested in writing a Spider-Man book as part of their 100 Things series. And, you know, I was familiar with these books because they're mostly sports books. It's like they do one for like every single like sports team and like college team and stuff, like 100 Things so-and-so fans know and do. Although I never really put two and two together that they all were part of the same publishing company. I mean, I just kind of, you know, they're like, you know, I saw them as kind of like hobbyist books, like, oh, you know, you need to find a gift for somebody that you know likes a team or something and you don't know what to do. Oh, this book will work. You know what I mean? So, which is kind of like for the most, and they pride themselves on that. Like, that's kind of like their thing. And, you know, I was initially kind of like, oh, you know, a cold call. What's this about? You know, I spoke to an acquisitions editor about it, and you know, we kind of like kicked some ideas back and forth, and you know, I also did a little additional research on some of their other things, and I saw that like over the past year they had done an Avengers book, they had done a Star Wars book, they had done a Superman book. I mean, all kind of connected to major theatrical releases. I mean, that was clearly the avenue that they were going for, was trying to tie these pop culture characters with movies. Because let's face it, Dan, I mean, you and I have talked about this at length on the podcast. I mean, at this point, for a lot of these, you know, companies like Marvel and DC, I mean, the comics are kind of like a farm system, and it's the movies and the TV shows where, you know, the audience is. I mean, you know, so you know, and they explained to me outright, like, you know, this book should be geared towards more casual fans. And they're like, we know that, you know, they knew that they were familiar with our podcast, they're familiar with Chasing Amazing, they're familiar with SuperiorSpiderTalk.com, and they were like, they even said, because I was like, oh, you know, should I be trying to get interviews with these people? And they were like, well, you probably have a lot of the stuff on hand already from like the stuff that you've done with your podcast and your website. But I mean, I still wanted to like reach back out and get more information. But they, you know, they were, you know, trying to guide me to dive deep, but not dive so deep that, you know, there was no other side. you know, so, you know, we after meeting with the acquisitions people, you know, we signed the contract, and I met my editor, and that's when like we kind of started to formulate more of what the book was going to be. And, you know, I don't know if this is, you know, yeah, to their credit, I mean, they gave me a lot of latitude. Like I came up with an initial list of 100 things and was kind of thinking as I submitted it, oh, this is like too heavily tilted towards the comics. They're going to like say, no way, it needs to be more broad. And outside of like a couple of little tweaks, it was pretty much good to go. And I was like, oh, so I'm going to get to, not only am I getting to write this book, but I'm getting to write like a book I want to really write. Cause I was worried that I was going to have to like write about like all these actors and directors and producers. Cause the Avengers book was actually very heavily tilted towards the movies. There was like bios of like all the individual actors, all the directors and producers, and like, you know, Kevin Feige, you know, like all the stuff. And I was like, I really don't want to do that for Spider-Man. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
like, you know, like, I mean, there's some stuff from the movies in there, but like, I didn't want to like have to get too entrenched in that. But no, I mean, they were like, you know, write this book about the comics. But, you know, like, again, keep in mind, like, you're introducing this to people. And like the other catch was like coming up with things to do. And they, you know, they kind of admitted outright, this is always the thing that seems to trip up their writers. But like, I kind of faked, not even say faked it, but I got through that by saying, well, what if I like came up with like a handful of stories that are like essential reads? Haha. I remember our essentials, Dan. and said, like, you know, you need to read these. These are must reads. Is that, can that be something to do? And they're like, oh, absolutely. And then I was like, you know, they wanted like at least like 10 to 12 things to do. So I was like, all right, well, I got like seven or eight stories to read, and I could fill out the rest of the list with like, listen to our podcast, because they said pitch your podcast. And they were like, write about going on a comic book, you know, comic book collection and chasing, you know, how you did your Chasing Amazing thing. I'm like, OK, I can do that. And then I came up with a couple more things, and it was like, all right, this book's going to happen. And then I kind of finished it with, and I'll say, make wheat cakes, because, you know, what better thing to do if you're a Spider-Man fan than make wheat cakes?
So let me ask you, did you make the wheat cakes?
Oh, God, you know, you're the second person to ask me that question. So here's the thing. So my wife,
I have heard you say multiple times you've done everything in this book. So let's see if this holds up.
All right. Full disclosure. When this book first became a reality, my wife and I had this conversation. My wife is like the baker, and like she does like good breakfast stuff, like French toast, waffle, stuff like that. And I was like, okay, I'm putting this wheat cake thing in there. I've never tried this recipe though. She's like, oh, we got to do it. And like, oh, we're going to do it. Yeah, we're going to do it. And then like I was like writing the draft, and it's like, we got to make the wheat cakes. Yeah, we're going to make the wheat cakes. And then I finished the first draft, and as we were editing it, it's like, oh, we got to get the wheat cakes. We got to make the wheat cakes. And it was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then we submitted like the edited first draft and got some feedback from the editor, and it was still like, oh, we got to make the wheat cakes. Oh, yeah, we got to make the wheat cakes. And then the book came out, and we still have not made the wheat cakes. So we need to make the wheat cakes, Dan. We need to make
the wheat cakes. What kind of Spider-Man fan are you?
I know.
You know, one of the ingredients in your wheat cakes is arsenic.
Oh, stop it. Like my wife helped copy it. I mean, like, I had editors and proofers and stuff at the publisher, but you know, we obviously like reread it like 9 million times as well. And she, like, there was at one point she thought there was something wrong with the recipe, and she just didn't see something that I typed in there. She's like, no, this doesn't make sense. It needs something. And I'm like, oh no, it's right there. Oh, okay. I think it was like the molasses or something like that. She like didn't see where the molasses was. So anyway.
Well, the wheat cakes are literally the last thing in the book. So let's go to the beginning, sure. Which is one of my favorite parts of the book, which just so happens to be the part you didn't write. So there's that.
Right.
Yeah, so you have a great foreword from none other than the legendary Tom DeFalco, right. And which my favorite quote in the entire book comes forth, which is him saying, talking about our podcast, yes, it's a podcast that used to invite Ron and me on for the occasional interview, but it's gotten too big and fancy for us. I thought that was hysterical. So Tom, you know, was really – or the legendary Tom – nice enough to write a foreword to the book. I guess I'm curious, can you tell us about that foreword and how it came to be, and I guess your reaction to it the first time you read it?
Well, I had reached out to Tom for the book like a couple of times, and you know, what basically happened was like with these other 100 Things books, some of them had forwards and some didn't. And like the Superman book had one from Mark Waid in it, but I don't think the Avengers or the Star Wars books did. So I was kind of like, I was in talking with my editor, he was like, can we do this? And he was like, I was getting kind of like a non-committal answer about it, and then, until finally, like, I think like the first draft was done, and I was like, are we doing a forward or no? And they're like, do you have someone in mind? And I was like, I'll ask Tom, because I mean, we were at like as great as our conversations with Tom and Ron, of course, have been on the show, Dan, like he was like, you know, when we were talking on the phone, like it, like, I think because he knew he wasn't being recorded. I mean, it was like not off the record, obviously, but it was just an even more informal conversation. It just was it felt like talking to a friend. It felt like me talking to you on the phone about comics. You know what I mean? Like he was just being so like chatty, and then like we were talking about his book of interviews that I know you own that book, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I love that book. I even told him, I was like, great. That book has been like, you know, like a divining rod for me while writing this thing. I mean, you know, we've done so many interviews ourselves, but like, you know, even when we prep for our interviews, I always kind of look at that book first to be like, all right, what did Tom ask these guys? And let's, you know, how can we vary it a little bit so we're not saying the same exact thing? Or is there something in that book that we need a little more from? You know what I mean? So the fact, you know, we were having this conversation. So I reached back out to Tom, and, you know, unfortunately I didn't give him a ton of time to do it, but he was like, I'd be honored. He was like, you know, in exchange, I require 4 copies. I was like, okay, exactly 4. And that's what I did.
Nobody does irascible praise quite like Tom.
Yeah, he was fantastic. And you know, he's like, you know, of course I'll have to praise Ron in it. I'm like, of course, because, I mean, you know, like that relationship is not just for show, for, you know, for comics. I mean, you could tell that they truly do adore each other. So, yeah, like that just came together pretty quickly and haphazardly. I mean, but he was like more than willing to do it. And like, I didn't even have to, I mean, I was like, yeah, you know, like, just talk a little bit about how you know me and how you know the subject matter. He's like, I know what I'm doing. this is not my first rodeo.
even better, he gave us our own Marvel adjectival names.
Of course. You're Dapper Dan, right?
I am Dapper Dan, and you're Mischievous Mark.
Yeah, I think that fits, because you're definitely more dapper than I am.
I'm
definitely the troublemaker of the two.
That seems to be right. Well, that was really great to read. I guess my next big question, and we kind of talked about this a little bit, is like, I mean, anybody that knows you, or anybody that knows you as well as I do, knows that you could have written 100 things about Hobgoblin if you had to. You know? And you definitely have written that book before, I'm pretty sure.
Right.
You know, it's got to be tough, because not only did you have to narrow it down to 100 things, you're only doing 3 or 4 pages per thing. You know, how did you even – well, let's talk about just the 100 things first. How did you even begin to narrow down the 100 things? Like, what parameters did you set for yourself? Like, you know, you have creators in there, but you only have, you know, you have mostly writers and some artists, Ditko, the Romitas, McFarlane – but no Ramos or Friends, although Friends gets mentioned a lot. What was your kind of like deciding line on what made it into the book and what didn't?
Yeah, I mean, I would have done more on creators and more artists if I had Bagley in there too. So I didn't completely. But it was more tilted towards the writers, which is probably also when we talk about comics, kind of how I more tilt the conversation. But, you know, what I was trying to do was like, again, the idea was to keep this as kind of accessible and broad as possible. So, I mean, first things first, you know, it's 1 to 100 and it is ranked by order of importance. Like that's kind of, you know, which actually kind of makes it tricky sometimes, because you're kind of like, you know, your mindset is to go chronologically, especially with like a character like Spider-Man that goes back 50 plus years. But like, you know, they were very insistent on kind of ranking this by importance, which, I mean, in some cases, like when you're talking about characters and creators or storylines, I mean, like, you know, it's kind of like the Master Planner trilogy is kind of like the story that begets everything else. You know what I mean?
I was going to say it works out like kind of well chronologically too in your book.
Yeah. But like, you know, kind of looking at some of the other pop culture books that Triumph had done and then kind of using my own judgment. I mean, like what I wanted to do was kind of narrow it down based on like, things that more casual fans would recognize. Like I tried to keep it like the characters I chose to focus on were mostly characters not only from the comics that are important to the comics, but, you know, like if they showed up in a movie, they made it. You know what I mean? Like I mean, that's how like actually from a comic book standpoint, I like Rhino to me is not the most important villain. You know what I mean? Like, but Rhino showed up in a movie, I was like, he's got to be in this book somewhere. You know what I mean? And then and the same with like creators. Like I tried to focus on creators that had contributed to stuff that not only were like big stories in the comics, but were also kind of like, you know, got mined for other things. You know what I mean? Like obviously McFarlane because of Venom and how Venom has been used, and also like, you know, DeFalco for all the, I mean, well, DeFalco has done so much over so many different eras. Ditto with like Jerry Conway, like Bagley because of Ultimate, and Bendis because of Ultimate. Although obviously I don't think you would be arguing on either of those people as being important.
Yeah.
So that was kind of like, you know, where I was going with narrowing it down. And then of course, like, I had to make sure I put some stuff about the current movie coming out, because again, I mean, it is meant to tie in. So it's like, okay, I don't know if you could really say, it's hard to say 10, 15 years from now, if John Watts is going to have the same level of impact on the Spider-Man zeitgeist as Sam Raimi did. But, you know, he's the director of the new movie. He's got to be in the book. You know what I mean? Like, ditto with Tom Holland. So one of the things that, like, was kind of in my original list when I pitched it was more of the Mark Webb stuff, because I was kind of like, oh, they're going to want to, like, more movie stuff. So I was going to, like, do a profile on Mark Webb, a profile on Emma Stone.
Yeah.
And the editor was like, oh, there's too much Mark Webb stuff in there. I'm like, oh, great. I can take that right out.
Speaking of which, what were some of the hardest chapters to cut when designing the book? I mean, I could see the temptation to go into every power that Peter has. And, like, you know, you have a chapter on the spider sense, but, like, in regards to costumes, you really only have one on the black costume, not even the red and blue one. Did you at one point have more on his various costumes or anything?
Yeah, like originally I was thinking, like, should I do something on the web shooters? So I do something on, some of the different powers, some of the different. I wasn't really thinking costumes, because I was kind of like, I kind of in my mind was like, well, you know, I'll cover costumes when we talk about different eras of Spider-Man. Like, I kind of talk about him joining up with the Future Foundation in the Spider-Man Human Torch chapter. And, you know, I kind of talk a little bit about like stealth Spidey during some of the Dan Slott stuff and like, you know, but like, not for nothing, I wanted to do like a whole chapter dedicated to like the loser villains. Because like, you know, everyone was like, I was only be like, you know, these are like the not ready for primetime players. And like, you know, there was obviously more creators that I would have wanted to do. So I wanted to do something specifically on Friends. I wanted to do something. I didn't think of Ramos per se, but there were certainly should Peter David have gotten a proper chapter? I mean, like, you know, we certainly talk about Gene DeWolf in that book. I talk about 2099 in that book, you know, so it's like, you know, it would have been nice.
It's covered either way, and to a certain regard.
Yeah, well, that's it. That's kind of how I like covered it. Like, I figured like Ron would be covered with a lot of the Tom DeFalco stuff and like the Spider Girl stuff, and that was the other thing too. Like the multi-dimensional, or the, you know, the multiverse Spider-Man. Like I, that was definitely kind of like short shrifted, because I was just like, you know, how deep do you go, you know? Like,
right, but you do talk about Spider-Verse, so
I do because it's current, and yeah.
Well, one of the things that was striking to me when I first got it is like how hefty the book is, you know. It's not just some like pocket guide to the character, and I guess I should have imagined that since it's 100 things. You know, but yeah, it's a fully fleshed out compendium. And this might be the nerd in me, but I thought the most impressive feature of it was your end notes, which are really exciting to me to kind of go through and reverse engineer your research if I wanted to learn more. But can you talk about your research process for the book?
Yeah, I mean, this was kind of tricky because it's so anti what I usually do. Like, I really didn't write a single word until I had all of my research laid out. Like, usually I kind of like will go half. I mean, like, this is kind of like the old newspaper reporter in me, where, like, you know, you sometimes go so far with a story until you hit a not a dead end, but a roadblock, and you're like, okay, with a phone call, and you know, do I need more info on this? You know what I mean? Like, but with this, I was like, no, I want to have everything laid out. So, like, I went through all of our interviews with some of those few people that we could not get on. Like, I listened and downloaded a bunch of podcast interviews with them from other shows, and just kind of went through them. And, like, as I was listening with Johnny Notes, I, like, you know, probably earned frequent flyer miles at, like, a local Starbucks near me, where I would sometimes go and just plug in my headphones. And in fact, although there was one time I went there and, like, someone thought that my headphones were too loud. They're like, but they kept saying, your music is loud. I'm like, well, it's not music, so it must not be my headphones.
Mark, I didn't realize we had such great singing voices.
Yeah, it's Dan Slott, like, yelling about something. Like, I did it! I killed him! Or whatever, you know? Like, but, yeah, so, like, I basically transcribed, like, hours upon hours of interviews, and, like, you know, with, like, highlighting, like, parts where I'm like, okay, this would be relevant for this chapter, this would be relevant for that chapter. I sought out my favorite piece of research was the Steve Ditko essays from the little zines that he did in the 2000s. Like, you really can't find those anywhere. You have to, like, go to this website. It's like Ditko. Oh, God. I forgot the name of the website. I can. It's in the end notes, Dan.
I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, there you go. But, like, the name of these zines is called The Comics. And, you know, it's basically like Steve Ditko's podium for all things like objectivism and, you know, Ayn Randism and stuff like that. And it's like him, and it's edited by, like, his, I don't even know if they're friends, it's an associate of his out on the West Coast. And I basically, like, email him, explain what I was doing, and say, you know, I'm like, I need everything that you got. And he, like, they charge you for, like, photocopies. Because that's what it is. It's not a real, you know what I mean? It's like sheets of loose leaf, but whatever. It's fine. But, like, you know, kind of going through those writings, and, you know, I said to somebody else, it's not the gospel. I didn't view them as, like, the gospel, because, like, again, it's one person's point of view, and it's completely unfiltered. And because Ditko never gives interviews, it's completely unchallenged. So, like, you know, he's just like, you know, and this was a hard thing too. It was like, how much do you actually include with him, like, just completely burying Stan Lee? And, you know, like, what a, like, you know, money grubbing freeloader Stan Lee was. And it's like, well, you know, I don't know if casual people really, I mean, I touch on it, but I don't think casual people really need to know what Steve Ditko thinks of Stan Lee to that degree. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like mining through that and, like, the bitterness, but to actually get, like, some of the nuggets out of the creative process. Like, the fact that Spider Sense was a completely random, like, afterthought, which we talked about a few episodes ago, because that just fascinated me that it was like, you know, Ditko drew squiggly lines and Lee was like, watch this. And it's like, oh, it's radar sense, like a bat, except he's a spider. It's great.
Like, I mean, I have a question here I was going to ask you about, and I guess maybe you've answered it. But, yeah, I was curious about how you handled research on some of these kind of controversial elements. I mean, other than, like, Ditko and Lee's feud and who owns what and who created what and Kirby's own assertions that he created the character, but, like, even just, you know, Christopher Priest and his connections to DeFalco and yeah, friends, there's, you have a you know, a part of one of the sentences here that says, you know, friends and DeFalco say this isn't true, but, you know, how did you handle all of that research when you're getting conflicting things and popular theories and all that stuff.
Yeah, I had to keep it as casual as possible. Like if I was writing for Back Issue, I would have done more of a he said she said thing and tried to be more scintillating about it. But I mean, because again, I mean, like, the core audience are people who, like, are going to see a movie or have just seen a movie. I mean, do they really need to know, like, the fact that, like, you know, JRJR was getting iced out by people because, you know, they thought it was like a nepotism thing that he only had a job in the first, you know what I mean? Or like that, or the fact that, like, you know, Bendis had to basically like beg Mark Bagley to do Ultimate because Bagley was just like, no, I'm done with Spider-Man. I hate Spider-Man. Like, never again. You know what I mean? Like,
but you did manage to work all these things in there
in very subtle ways and without like really belaboring it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like one of the big chapters that I had to pare down from the initial draft was the Stan Lee chapter, because the way it was originally written, there was a lot more about kind of Stan Lee, maybe the not so wonderful Stan Lee.
Yeah.
And, you know, because it was like, you know, do I, you know, how much do I need to honor that story? Because at the same time, I feel that is a story that gets told a lot now. Maybe it's like an overcompensation.
Like, I've always felt that way, but I'm also not an artist that worked with Stan Lee, so.
Right. But that's the thing. Like, I, because of like the level of research I was doing, like as time went on, I was just getting more and more of like that feedback loop of the anti-Stan Lee stuff in there. And, you know, like the original chapter I had for Stan Lee was like twice the length because I had so much of that in there. And I was like, you know, when I was kind of paring back, because I knew, you know, there was a target word count and I was over it.
I can't imagine that, Mark.
Right? I know. I'm not remotely verbose enough to be over the word limit. That was one of the areas I trimmed back, because it was like, again, how much do people really need to know this? And you know, kind of on a personal level, like, I agree with you, Dan. It's like, how much of this is like now just like people just beating up on the guy because they feel he got too much credit years ago? Like, I mean, as much as I love the Sean Howe Untold Marvel comic story, like, I feel like both Stan and Jim Shooter just get savaged in that book. And I'm like, hey, come on, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, like we get it. The people you talk to didn't like them, you know, but
yeah. One of the things I love about this book is the totally unauthorized on the cover.
Yeah, that's totally Triumph. I had nothing to do with that.
I think it implies a kind of like level of scandal to the whole thing. But my question is more along the lines of how cooperative was Marvel with your inquiries regarding the book?
And, you know, it's in the acknowledgments. I reached out to Marvel Corporate a couple times and they helped arrange some interviews and they, like, you know, vetted some things for me. You know, so they were good sports about it. I mean, you know, I don't think, well, I shouldn't say I don't think. I know that because it's not an official, like, Marvel sanctioned product, they can't necessarily, like, promote it in any way, in any meaningful way. But they were helpful and like they understood the mission of what I was doing. And, you know, they and Dan, whether or not they've ever come on our show or not, I mean, these people in Marvel HQ, they know about us. They know who we are. They know what we're about. They know that we're fair. So, like, there was not a lot of, like, you know, hand-wringing to get some interviews. Like, I talked to Axel Alonso for this. I talked to Tom Brevoort about this. Tried talking to Dan Slott, but he was writing Dead No More. So he didn't have time.
That's too bad.
I know. He's, yes. And you know, but like, and I mean, they were very cooperative. I mean, you know, in terms of from a corporate level, and I appreciate them for that. And I did thank a couple of them in the acknowledgments because they were good sports about it. So
that's cool. This is more on a writing level, but one of the things I've always admired about your writing, whether it's for your blog or for this book, is just how in keeping it is. I don't know if this is intentional or not. With the kind of like classic Marvel writing style. It's like really friendly and excited, and it kind of has like a rhythm and rhyme to it that's kind of perfect for a book like this. like, I just kept, even though I knew most of the facts, I just had such a great time reading your writing, which I guess is just a good sign of a good writer. And,
well, thank you.
Separates you from the sheep like me. but I guess my question is, how do you maintain a voice and how do you balance your inner nerd to keep this thing like new reader friendly with that kind of upbeat voice you've got while still digging deep into your Spider-Man nerdery? Like what kind of mantras did you put to your writing when writing this thing?
Yeah, well, you know, besides cracking the beers open, no. I mean, like, and if this is cliched, I apologize, but like, I mean, Dan, this was so much fun for me to do, even though it was like a lot of work and it was a very tight deadline. Like, I mean, I basically had like 3 to 4 months to do this whole thing, which was not a lot of time, but while working a full-time job.
And you're still doing this show.
And I'm still doing the show, although you gave me a break on reviews, so I appreciate that. I had, but I was having the time of my life doing this because I you know, and this is a credit to Triumph and their editors, is that, I mean, they really did just let me write the book I wanted to write. I was like, okay, if I was going to write a book about Spider-Man, this is how I wanted to do it. And they didn't throw any obstacles out there for me to do that. I mean, you know, as long as I was kind of within the parameters we initially discussed when we were first getting this together. So, I mean, any kind of like enthusiasm or excitement that I put forward, it really wasn't forced. I was just excited to be able to be talking about all of this stuff in kind of like one fluid place. Because, I mean, you know, I've over the years, I've talked about Hobgoblin and I've talked about Superior Spider-Man and I've talked about, you know, the Master Planner trilogy. But like, you know, to be able to kind of like have like one repository for everything was just like I wrote it thinking, man, if I was like a newer fan, I would love having this, you know? So that's why I wrote the book for me from like 15 years ago.
Well, it's funny because you and I had always talked about doing something like this. And then out of the blue, the opportunity just came.
Right.
So you know, it was a great kind of like moment for it to just happen, you know?
Yeah, you know, and like it does make you wonder. I mean, like, you know, if without kind of these parameters and guidelines and stuff, you know, what would have it looked like otherwise? And maybe it would have kind of, I'm sure it would have been great, but at the same token, would it have gotten buried under other stuff? I don't know. I mean, like, you know, the fact that this was kind of very clear cut, the mission was clear. It's 100 things. Don't go over 100. Don't go over this many words. you know, like, try and have this many other things in there. It was like, okay, that kept it focused. And you know,
I wish we could take that mantra to heart for everything we do.
Right. Because if it was like, it could be 100 or it could be 111 things, then I would be like, well, could it be 123 things? Or how about this 134 things? You know, like, it's about time I finally do that chapter on the tarantula, you know, like.
Would there be an opportunity for you to expand the book to 200 things if it sold well?
I don't know. Maybe, but my sense is probably not. Yeah. But never say never. I don't know. I don't know what the next gen of this book is, because it's like, yeah, I mean, there's plenty of things we could talk about, but it's like, yeah, I think they still see this as kind of like, you know, like an entry point for somebody, and to 100 more would be like a graduation step, and it's like they don't want to assume that someone has reached that step. They're just like they're always looking, they seem to be looking more at the first step for somebody.
Well, inevitably when they relaunch Spider-Man movies again in a decade, they'll reach out for you to update the book or something.
There you go.
So like I said,
well, 100 things about Venom next summer, right?
Yeah, there you go. like I said, I'm obsessed with your endnotes, and not just to see my name in them.
Okay.
Which I will admit a certain narcissism too.
I only put my name first because of alphabetical.
Sure.
Before GV. No, I'm serious.
Yeah. But again, like you said, you did a ton of new emails and or interviews through email and the phone, which you can see all listed in the back. Can you talk about some of them? I mean, obviously, they weren't recorded for our podcast, which is a shame. But what interview did you think was like the most rewarding or unusual or like, I can't believe I got this guy?
I don't know if there was anyone where I was like, I can't believe this happened per se. I mean, I was like kind of shocked that I was able to get Axel on the phone. Not that Axel Alonso, not that he doesn't do press, but like, you know, especially because I wanted to talk to him about not just like Marvel, what's doing right now, but like his time as Spider Group editor during the JMS era, which was, you know, probably, well, certainly ended on the most controversial story in the history of the character. So like, and they knew going into that, that's what I wanted to talk about. And, you know, I wanted to talk a little bit about the rift with JMS and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I could tell that he wasn't entirely comfortable talking about that, but the fact that like I was kind of upfront about it and they still were like, no, we can give you some time with Axel, I was like, all right, that's cool. And Axel was generally pretty good about it. I mean, like, he, you know, like what I could tell, you know, what he didn't want to answer, he dodged how he dodged, but you know, like what, but you know, he's a professional, he can't burn bridges, you know what I mean? Like, he doesn't he's not gonna like completely badmouth J. Michael Straczynski. And but like probably my favorite of the interviews was Tom Brevoort, because like Tom Brevoort is just like, I don't know, like he's just this big giant fan. And I know that he's another one that like sometimes people get ticked off by in terms of his comments in the media and the press and stuff like that. And, you know, I'm not here to like defend or criticize any of that. I'm just, you know, talking strictly about our conversation, because what I really wanted to talk about with Tom, well, there was two things. First, because he was one of the masterminds behind Untold Tales of Spider-Man with Kurt Busiek, and so I wanted to talk a little bit about that. But then, like, one of the big kind of like holes I found in my research, in large part because of the people behind these stories are kind of so inaccessible, were like the Spider-Man in Civil War and Spider-Man with the Avengers eras. So like, you know, basically like all of like the Bendis and Mark Millar stuff, because like I just couldn't get Bendis and Mark Millar. I definitely couldn't get Mark Millar. And like, and when I did listen to interviews about them, like people are not asking them questions about Civil War as it relates to Spider-Man. They're just asking about, so Civil War was like about the Patriot Act, right? You know what I mean? Like, it's just, yeah, like, you know, that's the level they're coming at it with. So like I reached out to Tom to be like, can you talk as the editor of those books, can you talk to me about, I'm looking specifically at Spider-Man and like, you know, kind of what was going on in the back room, so to speak, when this was going on. And like Tom was just like free flowing with the anecdotes and like, you know, conversations he had with Bendis and conversations he had with Millar. And then like kind of him being like, because, you know, like Brevoort, and this is not a secret, I mean, like Brevoort hated the idea of Spider-Man on the Avengers. He's like, this is terrible. Like there's no business, you know, like he's the everyman. What is he going to start asking like Tony Stark for a loan now? Cause he's on the Avengers, you know, like other editorial powers saw the dollar signs and Mark Millar and Bendis were pushing it so hard he gave in. So like, I liked how like Brevoort kind of couched things with like, so here's what happened in the back room, but also this is what I was thinking, you know, like this is crazy. This is awesome. This is like, you know, like what is Bendis doing? You know, like I loved like this anecdote he threw in there about Norman Osborn kind of becoming the big bad of the Marvel universe. He was like, you know, the conversation he had with Bendis was that they wanted to do something where every hero in the Marvel universe could be Spider-Man for the day, because now they know what it's like to have like a villain like Osborn, who was just so powerful and made them feel so helpless and like losers, and like that was part of the pitch, was like, we want all the Avengers to be like Spider-Man. That's why we want Osborn to be the villain in like Secret Invasion and then in like Dark Avengers and Siege and all that. And I was like, that's a really cool like little story. I don't know if that's like a total game changer, but I just liked that like perspective on it. So
I don't know if that ever really was reflected in the comics.
Yeah, well, that's what they were going for.
Yeah. Well, that's crazy. Well, that's cool. You know, I'm learning a lot while reading the book. I mean, like every time I think I know everything you've written in there, I discover something new that I didn't know about. But I'm curious for you. There were so many Spider-Man comics, movies, and toys, etc., to dig through. What were some of the hardest details to lock down when you put this book together? And what elements of Spider-Man's history, and et cetera, like, did you feel a little shaky on going into this? You've been really reinforced by doing this process.
I mean, we've talked about this on the show. I have a lot of blind spots with, like, the animation stuff. So, like, I kind of cheated. I just kind of dedicated one or two chapters to, like, one to Spider-Man 67 and then the other to, like, all the other animation. But, like, you know, as part of doing that, like I sat down and like I binged on the 90s series. I binged on Spectacular. I watched some of like the newest series and some of like, well, then there's like the Doogie Howser CGI series. I watched a couple of that. I was like, all right, we're good on that. So like that was kind of coming. But at the same token, like it, I didn't realize how great Spectacular Spider-Man was, the animated series. I thought like that's one of the better non-comic book representations of the character. In terms of like comic book history, I mean, what's kind of surprising is most the least amount of information is from like the 2000s, like the JMS into Brand New Day stuff. Brand New Day was covered because even though we haven't talked to Dan Slott, we talked to like everybody else. And like I feel like we have a good picture of what the writer's room was like at that time.
Yeah.
From like talking to Guggenheim and talking to, I talked to Zeb Wells a bit for this and talking to, what's his name? Joe Kelly. You know, like I didn't feel like that was a blind spot, but yeah, like everything from like Reboot Volume 2 on to Brand New Day, it was kind of dark. And I talked to Howard Mackey a bit about Volume 2, and like I don't even know if he remembers anymore what was going on at that time.
He just like blacked out and woke up with JMS writing the book and was like, what just happened?
Yeah, like I kept trying to bait him with like, and I know he's friends with John Byrne, so like I knew he wasn't going to like throw shade at John Byrne, but I kept trying to bait Howard with like, you know, so when Byrne was like, you know, basically rewriting Spider-Man's origin so that he owned a laptop instead of a microscope, like that was the big change. That was a revolutionary difference. Or, you know, like, you know, why did Aunt May come back with a bomb in her brain? And Howard's just like, I don't know. Let's talk about the Clone Saga. I'm like, this is like the first time like someone was actually like, no, I want to talk about the Clone Saga.
People rag on the Clone Saga, but they've not read Volume 2.
Right, exactly.
Right. One of the things I found myself thinking while reading your book and realizing that I know a lot of the obscure details you reference just off the back of my hand is, damn, I have relegated way too much of my brain to knowledge of Spider-Man. Did you feel that way while creating the book?
Yeah, maybe a little. I mean, I don't know at what point any of this is useful outside of like, well, I got to write a book, so that's useful. But, you know,
in a weird way, this book is kind of like giving the okay stamp to all of your life choices.
Yeah. I mean, you know, someone was saying like someone was asking me about the chapter with the where I kind of go on the guided tour of New York, and they were like, oh, is it kind of weird to like you know, you live in New York to kind of see all these things that show up in the comics. I said, I don't know if it's weird. I said, I'm sure my wife thinks it's weird when we go to the Museum of Natural History. And I'm like, well, this is where Stegron attacked Spider-Man with the dinosaur exhibit.
I was hoping you would include the Mindworm house.
Oh, the Rockaway Beach house. I almost did. And then that was cutting room floor material.
Yeah, well. Mindworm. You know, that villain everybody loves.
Yeah, he's great. It's terrific. It's a great bathing suit.
Well, I guess that's really it for me. But so I just wanted to say congratulations again. And now I'm obligated to ask you, now that you're a published author on a book about Spider-Man, what does it mean to you that you've got a book that, despite being totally unauthorized, is going to influence a whole new generation of fans who are learning about Spider-Man for the first time?
Man, we've asked that question so many times, and like, I've heard people kind of, well, some are kind of like, yeah, whatever, it's cool. And but then, like, you know, there are people like Ron and others who kind of get taken aback by it. And I'm definitely in the latter camp right now. I'm kind of taken aback by that question. I mean, you know, this was fun for me. And the fact that I got to kind of just have fun talking about something I love, talking about something that I get to do with you every other week. Well, people hear it every week, but we talk every other week. Sausage making. It's, you know, when I started doing Chasing Amazing in 2011, I mean, it was like, you know, at that point, that was kind of like at the peak of blog to books, you know, and, you know, in some ways I still haven't really gotten to tell that story in full about, you know, the story I was wanting to tell when I started Chasing Amazing, which was like, you know, oh, how does one man go on a crazy quest to collect comics? But, at the same token, I never thought that I would like kind of evolve or emerge as like not an expert, but like a voice of authority on Spider-Man and the fact that it's, you know, because of working with you and doing some of the stuff at other sites that I've done, the fact that like I can say I was able to do that now. I mean, like it goes beyond what I dreamed of doing. I mean, I've always wanted to write and I've loved Spider-Man, but I never really thought that those two things would ever be useful together. So it's kind of amazing. And I, you know, I wouldn't trade it in for anything. So thank you for asking me that.
Oh, you're welcome. I had to. Obligations of our show.
We have standards.
Well, great, Mark. It was awesome to have you on this podcast. I hope you'll come back sometime soon.
Okay, will do. Anytime. Your people can call my people or, you know, just text me.
We'll do lunch sometime.
There you go.
Perhaps at my wedding in 2 weeks.
Yes.
There we go.
I will have to toast you. I will toast you with a non-alcoholic beer for Peter's sake, you know?
There you go. Somebody spiked the punch bowl.
No, Drug Pete. #.
Well, guys, it was great to have Mark on the show, and I hope that he returns real soon. It's almost like he'd make a great co-host to a show about Spider-Man. Well, anyway, of course, you can find all of our new Amazing Spider Talk and old Superior Spider Talk podcasts over at SuperiorSpiderTalk.com or find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and YouTube by searching for, you guessed it, Amazing Spider Talk. And if you do end up subscribing, which you undoubtedly will, you should leave us a rating and a review, and we'll be sure to read it on the air. And also, don't forget to vote in our Essentials survey, which is now live on SuperiorSpiderTalk.com. If you click on the banner, we want to know what 10 Spider-Man comics you consider essentials. Mark, I just noticed you lingering around in the room, so I guess I'll ask you one last time. Where can we follow you on the internet and pick up a copy of your book this week?
Oh, man. Like, you really took this way too far, Dan. I mean, this whole I'm a guest thing. Anyway, you can find me on Twitter at ChasingASMBlog. And you can find my book on triumphbooks.com or on Amazon or barnesandnoble.com or all major book retailers. It's officially coming out June 1st. I don't know if this podcast will drop before or after then, but like that is like you can actually allegedly walk into a bookstore then and see it in the store. And if your local comic book shop doesn't carry it, ask them to carry it because it was in Diamond preview, so they are distributing it. So
send I know us some pictures. Send us pictures if you see it in the wild.
Yeah, definitely. And if you want to talk to me about the book on Twitter, hashtag it 100 Spider-Man because that's you know branding, Dan. And also, if you have a book and you got it from Amazon yet, you got it through Amazon, leave a review on Amazon for me. They'll help the searchability of it. To answer Zeke's question to me, no, I'm not desperate for reviews. I just you know, like, it's just all about marketing it, Zeke. He sent me this. He seemed very concerned because he hadn't reviewed it yet. And he was like, are you, like, really desperate for reviews? I'm like, well, I'm not desperate, but, you know, if you want to review it, you can review it. I won't say no. you know, it's kind of like what we say on this website, on this podcast all the time about reviewing our show on iTunes and Stitcher and Google Play. And of course, also, I know there's some people who ordered copies that are not in the New York area and want to get like a signing or an inscription from me. If you tweet me or reach out. If we're Facebook friends, if you reach out to me on Facebook, I will send you information on how I can send you an inscription. So,
very cool.
Yes, I've already done 3 of them, so it can be done, people. Dan, where can we find you on all these things?
Oh, you want to find me in general, or?
Yeah. Well, you know, where can we find you for the next 2 weeks as a single man?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Dan Gavazdin or my Spider-Man account at Sup Spider Talk. We're probably going to be taking a little bit of a break on the podcast because I'm going to go get married and then spend a week doing honeymoonish things. And as you can imagine, that's probably not going to include talking to Mark through Skype, although I'll be talking to you in person, Mark, because you're going to be in my wedding.
Yes.
What a weird thing this world has conspired to make happen.
I got the hotel and everything.
Two strangers from the internet.
Yes.
So there you go. We will be meeting for the 3rd or 4th time, and yeah, it'll be a very high level of friendship, I guess.
Yeah, well, you know, I get to meet your family. I'll get to meet, you know, it's going to be great.
Yeah, it'll be really fun. Anyway, so expect a brief hiatus on the show, but you can always find our writing over at superiorspidertalk.com, which I'll be keeping up with. Perhaps not on my wedding day, but every other day I'll be posting things. So
there you go.
Keep an eye there.
Go on your honeymoon, Dan. Are you going to be staying at like a hotel that the Puma owns? Or
Yes, I am. And eventually we're going to go. The Puma is going to conspire to make me break into someone's house on his behalf before I turn around and realize what he was doing and disavow any friendship with Mr. Fireheart.
There you go. Thomas Fireheart. Can't trust him.
You cannot. Say, oh, yes, there's a deep dig you pushed on me, and I rose to the challenge.
There. Congratulations.
There you go. I've been reading a lot about honeymooning in Spider-Man comics to prepare because that's how things work, right?
Yes. But remember, if Mephisto comes, just tell him to go away.
Yeah. I hope my aunt doesn't get shot.
Oh, God.
Well, it depends on the ant.
Okay, there you go.
Mark, I heard your Uncle Ben once wrote a book, The Totally Unauthorized 100 Things Mets Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. Was he able to complete the list of 100 before he died?
Well, one of the things that, Uncle Ben, passionate Mets fan. I'm a passionate Mets fan. And the Mets are kind of like lovable losers, or maybe not that lovable, because, one of the things that he wanted to do was he wanted to streak on the field during the seventh inning stretch. And Uncle Ben, he wrote the chapter on how to do it, but he had not done it yet. And kind of like me with the wheat cakes, he was really upset that he never got to do this. So, we were at a game. The Mets were down like 11-1 in the seventh inning. And they started to rally though. And, the Mets had cut it to 11-8, and the bases were loaded, and Mike Piazza, the big, star catcher, Mr. Clutch, came up to bat. He, fastball down the middle of the plate. Piazza hits a high fly ball. Bases are loaded. If they get the four runs, they're going to complete the comeback. They're going to be up 12-11. And Dan, I don't know why, but at that point, Ben decides he's going to start streaking because he ran into the field as the ball was still in play. The play got nullified. it was like fan interference, and Piazza was called out, and, the inning was over, and, you can imagine how the fans responded, Dan. They were throwing batteries at him, and the security was tasing him. So yeah, he died because he got batteries thrown at his head. But he did get the streak. And I asked him as he was writhing on the ground dying, I was like, "How's it feel, Uncle Ben? You finally got to do all 100 things in your Mets book." And he said, "With great podcasts must also come amazing spider talk."